COVID.
How annoying is it when us as investment managers say to you,
how do I use ChatGPT?
It feels very similar to December 21 in terms of valuations and how exciting.
I mean, people have been saying that to me though for 2 years. So,
have they? Okay.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Because everybody wants to hold on to the balloon, but everyone wants to be the clever one that gets let's go with the balloon at the right time, right? Yeah. And that's very difficult.
Yeah.
We could also, if you want, the co-pilot trial.
What's this one up?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, happy to talk about that. The co-pilot trial, 66% of my users are using it regularly.
Are they?
Internally. So if you want to talk about that.
43. Yeah, we're going to talk about that first, I think. Okay. Either that or Waymo, I don't know.
He's on your trial.
Do any of your... Yeah. Any of your...
No, you are...
I mean, I've got access to it. I don't know if that is still a trial or...
It's not a trial. It's the rollout.
Okay.
In fact, you're one of the people that hasn't used it.
No, not much. I've still got one more training to do.
Any of your kids got sick yet?
No, but my wife literally said to me yesterday, they're going to get sick.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Because it's only a matter of time.
Yeah. We've had the kids, the teachers have been off. Falling like flies.
Have they? What, this neuro virus thing?
Yeah, just in time for Christmas.
Are they excited?
I mean, my daughter's not so bothered. My son has written about 10 letters to Santa and gets up at 5. Advent calendars are a bad idea.
Oh, really?
Son. He's got a Lego one, right?
Oh, so, cool.
Yeah, very cool. Not at 5:30 a.m.
No.
Daddy, look what I've got.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So, Ben, you were on a recent trip to Arizona, amongst other places, and you got in a self-driving car.
Talk us through it. I mean, yeah, so I've done a lot of travelling in the last month, actually. So I did, you know, been to Netherlands, see ASML. I've been to Barcelona, the biggest tech conference in Europe. I went to one of the biggest conferences in Arizona and NASDAQ as well. So I've seen the great and the good. I got off the plane in Arizona, straight into dinner with the CFO of NVIDIA, which was great.
Biggest company in the world.
Sometimes, depends on the day. And then, yes, one of the things, how do I got between my hotel and the conference, one of the options in Arizona is Waymo. Waymo, for those that you don't know, is the Google autonomous taxi service. It's called Waymo. Why?
Well, you told us this morning, and I was very impressed, actually.
So
I can't swear on this.
So the people at Google are big fans of Wayne's World, the Mike Myers film.
Is that right?
Yeah. And the company that Wayne set up was called Wayne's Motors. So Waymo is an homage to Wayne's World.
That's quite cool.
Anyway, yes. So you get to download the app, just like Uber. You book the taxi. It arrives. Mm. It's a Jaguar E-Pace electric.
Are they, they're all E-Paces?
Yes.
Wow.
And they have $200,000 worth of radar, LiDAR, cameras and sensors on top of the...
Hopefully we've got a video playing up for those watching now of the taxi coming up. But
yes,
if the tech people can't do it, then...
There you are. And then your app says, flashes and says, unlock the doors. Those little door handles open. You get into the car and it says, hello, Ben, how are you? Please put your seatbelt on and press the start button. You press the start button and off you go. And you can just see in this video now, turning, you can see on that little screen what it can see, so the route, but also more importantly other cars and other obstacles. You can see in this video now that it doesn't hang about. One, it's an electric car, so it beats a lot of cars off the line, off away from the lights.
I thought I was sitting in the front originally when I saw that bald-headed dummy.
It's not a dummy, sorry, that's just the headrest.
It looks like a dummy.
It does look like a dummy, doesn't it?
You can sit in that seat.
Can you?
Yes. But you can't sit in the back, in the driver's seat.
That is quite cool.
There are stickers everywhere saying, please do not push the pedals or turn the wheel or anything. And candidly, for me, admittedly, I trust technology quite a lot. It felt like a better mousetrap. It was cheaper. I didn't have to talk to the taxi driver. Sometimes you like to talk to taxi drivers. Sometimes you don't. How wacky your ideas are. It's good for macro. I always think it's good to talk about the economy. I like that. I stay away from politics.
How's business?
But yeah, 100%. So it felt safe, and it wasn't like your granny was driving you. It felt very reassured as well. And you get to control your own music. You can control the temperature yourself, which is great. You know, you don't have to open windows or anything. So you feel like you're sort of in control of the car, but not driving it, if that sort of makes sense. Yeah, and so here's the acid test. I took one Uber from the airport, and then I took eight Waymos while I was there.
Okay. So return on investment is 200 grand.
Yes, plus the car. So let's call it 300.
Okay, 300 grand. How many trips a day do we reckon?
Ah, so...
Because no one needs to sleep, but you do need to charge.
You need to charge it, yes. So let's... I mean, I haven't done the exact maths. Just some quick stats. So Google have released this in San Francisco. We think LA, Arizona, they're enacting in Miami and 10 other cities throughout 2025. Yeah. They've also just announced today they're doing it in Japan. So look, that 300 grand is pretty unsustainable. That 200,000 pounds of sensors is going to come down to 150 or 100.
Okay.
They'll probably get a good deal with whoever they use, but Jaguar. They are going to be able to do... I haven't done the number of trips that they could do, but let's say they do two trips an hour, and they can only work them 20 hours a day, something like that.
Yeah,
of course, so your hours are much higher, aren't they?
So so you can do 40 trips a day at $10, so you're doing $400 a day.
It takes a long time to get to.
Absolutely. So it's but you know, it's not a
Surely the price point is more than $10 a trip.
I was just making those probably got some pricing. Yeah. Well, they also, interesting, they do surge pricing as well, like Netflix does. So look, like most people, by the end of my trip, I was actually saying, okay, what does Waymo, how long does Waymo cost? How much does Uber cost? How much does Lyft cost? Right. So,
interesting.
Yeah, look, I think they are doing it as an experiment. It doesn't, I think it will be gross margin negative.
Is it just to showcase the technology? And
Yes, absolutely. And there's also a little bit of a battle here between Google, who have got belt braces and every other gizmo on the car that they can, and the full self-driving from Tesla, which is much more of a sort of camera and AI type solution. And we shall see with the new administration how much influence Elon has on what the authorities allow. Because here's the stat. A human kills another human in a car once every million miles. Roughly.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the question to everybody is, what is allowable by a computer? Is it a million? No. Is it 2 million? No. Is it 10 million? Possibly. Is it zero? That's the question in my mind. And that's what you've got to get past. Yeah. But did it feel like the future? More importantly, when my children in 10 years' time want to be ferried everywhere, would I be extremely happy for a robot to drive them? Actually, yes, I think I would.
I mean, happier in some ways than
you driving.
Well, certainly me driving. Certainly Mrs. Hughes driving. Sure. But an Uber with someone in the front that you don't know.
So do you trust that technology versus a 16-year-old Venezuelan that's just got off the plane with a license?
You choose.
Like, you know.
They say Venezuelans are very good drivers, by the way.
They're very good. Yes.
I haven't actually introduced the show.
I was going to say, you've got to introduce us.
Right.
I'm so excited about lunch that you forgot to introduce us.
Well, I've come in a bit hot, as you can imagine, because I was delayed on the district line. But hello, everyone. Welcome to Taking Stock After the Bell, episode 44. Delighted to be joined, as ever, by James Hughes, who is dressed down for the occasion. And Ben Barringer, Quartz Achievement's Chief Technology Analyst. I might be able to remember his biog from the last time he were on, but he joined Quartz Achievement in about 1972, despite his tender age. He spends his day talking about Google, Netflix, Meta, and the good stuff, and ASML and NVIDIA and all that stuff. So I haven't got a particularly tight agenda today, so we've started out with the self-driving car business, as you might have heard. But generally, tech has been on an absolute tear, Ben, so I thought it'd be quite a good time to get you back and discuss what's going on in the land of technology. And as we sort of said, you've done a few trips. You've got a chart here of the US tech sector in red against the US market in general. It's fair to say tech has had a pretty good run, right?
Yeah, look, it's always very... my job, there's always people trying to. I started my job in 1999. Sorry, so 99, that's a very right. good reference point, because the key question we were just talking about it, right. you get is this 99 and when do we call the top? And mm-hmm. and so what I've always got to be super careful of is what is the earnings power of these companies, because these companies have huge earnings mm-hmm. power. We've actually mm-hmm. got some charts on that in a sec. And then also what is signal, like what is really fundamentally important and what mm-hmm. is noise. You know, because there's a lot of noise and there's plenty of journalists that want to, you know, make noise around stuff because that's their business model. But what's important for our clients is that we invest. And this is very important, actually. It's very difficult to find to get cheap tech to outperform, because cheap tech generally is disrupted business models where earnings are generally falling. So remember, tech is a disruptive industry. And then on the other side of the sort of spectrum is very high growth companies mm-hmm. that are probably unprofitable, grow very, very fast. Personally, I think it's hard to sustain growth rates of over 20, 25% mm-hmm. for long periods of time. So eventually you get some kind of fall off in the delta of growth, the change in growth, mm-hmm. and that leads to a derating. And so those are a difficult market for me. So mm-hmm. I make no apologies for the fact that what I really try and find for our clients is growth at a reasonable price. Businesses that are growing anything from 10 to 20% yeah. that are reasonably yeah. priced. Not cheap, but on a 3-year view mm. can grow to are cheap versus the market.
Right. Yeah. I think the other, you know, if we go back to 99, and we've discussed this lots of times on this pod before and when you were on before, you know, the business is driving the market with different types of businesses, no yeah. large proportion weren't profitable. I think, you know, the businesses today are far more sophisticated. Yeah. I think the people running them are better.
Yeah.
You know, if we go back to the last real drawdown we had in US markets, that was kind of early 22, you know, December 21, when things started to roll.
We and again, put the chart back on here, actually, yeah, just to show that the tech sector did draw down quite heavily than the market.
But the interesting thing was, it didn't roll because of earnings. It rolled because of the macro environment, which yeah. was inflation, rates. You know, a rate cycle going northwards.
And the reopening of the economy, right? Yeah. So a lot of the red line in those days was the stay-at-home pandemic beneficiaries.
Correct. Mm. And I think, you know, and you know, growth stocks don't do as well in a higher rate environment. We're mm-hmm. now in a different environment, which is rates are getting cut. You know, there is no recession, touch wood. You know, if you look at labour markets, they still look decent. There's nothing out there at the moment that causes concern. So I think it is easy to look at the S&P and the NASDAQ and say, it's, you know, there's expensive stocks in there, but they are growing.
Yeah, I mean, it's that chart is that we put up. I put some little bullet points of my sort of checklist next to it. And the first one is fundamentals. Are fundamentals improving or yeah. stable and not decelerating? And that's always important. And you would expect that from a fundamental analyst.
Yeah.
The second thing is relative growth. Like, it was during the pandemic, there were three sectors that were growing, tech, utilities, and healthcare. And that meant that there was nowhere else to go.
No,
like I always think about Tina, there is no alternative. Mm. And that applies in lots of different forms. But so I have to be very cognizant of what's happening in the banking sector yeah. and in the oil sector and in small caps and so forth. And that's exactly yeah. right. So is tech going to continue to get a bid? Can people be interested in it? Relative to other things. And then to your point, interest rates, it's a long duration asset, therefore lower rates as we're in at the moment, you know, are supportive. So it's not just about the fundamental.
Mm. No. The one chart that I did want to sort of say, you know, take a step back and what is tech, and for us at Quilt Achievement and for many other businesses, Lloyds Bank or, you know, the small business in the high street, a proportion of our budget will be funneled towards technology spend, whether that is our Microsoft license, whether that is for new servers, whether that's for the Wi-Fi, whatever it might be. And I do like this chart here, because tech spending by businesses on IT technology is correlated to the economy and real GDP growth.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it, with an R squared of 0.55. So it's a good correlation. It's not brilliant.
It's not brilliant. We do like a good R squared.
But the point is, it is cyclical because everybody always thinks that tech, and particularly the stuff the sexy stuff you get to talk about in tech, is just a structural theme and it goes on forever. Yeah. Yeah. That's just not the case. Mm. Cloud computing is cyclical. When people tighten their belts, you can turn up cloud computing, or more importantly, you can turn down cloud computing. Yeah. It is flexible. In simple terms, tech spending is a percentage, it's a cost, right? So it's a percentage of your revenue. And so you try and do as much as you can with it. Now, the overall percentage is generally increasing. I think IT spend is about roughly 5% of GDP. It's looked like it might rise up towards 10% of GDP, but it's still cyclical, and you always have to bear that in mind.
And the cyclical backdrop, as we've discussed, is pretty good at the moment, right? We've all been worried about a recession in the US because rates have gone to 5%.
Depends where you live. Right? Depends where you live, Jonathan. Well, I mean, so if you're in the US, which is where a lot of my companies reside and also sell a lot of stuff, things are pretty reasonable, and they seem to have got a little bit more of animal spirits post the sort of new administration outlook as well. Compare that to Europe, it's not quite as good. You've talked ad nauseum about all of this. And then, you know, other areas are more mixed. But the big market, US, is pretty...
Animal spirits is a good way to think about it, because if you're the chief financial officer or finance director of a small business in the UK, whether that's more quarter year in small business, but, you know, a business in the UK, you need to be confident in the outlook for the next 12, 18, 24 months if you're going to commit to, right, we're going to move all of our data into the cloud and we're going to upgrade all our laptops. Yeah. You know, and ultimately, that's what it comes down to. So I think that animal spirits thing is quite important, actually.
Yeah, look, and I think Trump, certainly you get to talk to a lot of Americans, admittedly not in taxis, but, you know, you talk to a lot of Americans when you're in America. And like or loathe Donald Trump, he is pro-business. Mm. And for want of a better word, he's sort of got your back, you know what I mean? And you, to your point, if you're doing a big piece of CapEx or investment, you need that feeling that he's got your back for four years. Now, the truth versus the rhetoric might be something different, but you know that it's important that you at least feel confident.
Yeah, and the sort of two areas of tech really I wanted to kind of dig in a little bit on was a sort of allied really is firstly cloud, and secondly AI. So talk to me, and they're sort of these companies are quite dominant in these sectors, aren't they? So why don't you talk to us a bit about cloud, what that means, and who the beneficiaries are.
So that's what I was just saying about, you know, cloud's growth can slow in tougher macro times. Wow. That's exactly what we saw probably a year, probably 18 months ago. Now, the industry called it optimization. But, classic. You know, an industry loves a spoof word for bad stuff, doesn't it? So you saw slowing growth of cloud, and that's because companies were looking to tighten their belts. Now, interestingly, companies like Amazon and even Microsoft helped their customers try and save money.
Yeah.
Now we're back through the other side of that. People are feeling a bit more confident about that. Those growth rates have accelerated back to Amazon at 19, Microsoft in the sort of high 30s, and Google in the high 30s, almost 40%. So that's important. What's important as well, though, is that the penetration of cloud is still sort of 40-ish%, right? And remember, it's important to invest in themes, if you do what I do, between sort of 5% penetration and 65% penetration. Okay. Yep. So the cloud theme is very important. If there is one reason why we've got so much AI in the last 10 years, you know, mathematics of AI will date back to the 1950s, but what you needed was to be able to store data cheaply and process data cheaply. And guess what? That's what cloud does.
You need to have your data in the cloud in order to apply the AI tools to them. You can't have it in a server in your garden.
Well, you need to have it in one massive place. Mm. And candidly, a server room in the back of your office is not big enough, probably.
And it's now, we've just passed the 2-year anniversary of the Daily Mail moment for AI, if I can call it that.
Yes.
I think that's your phrase, not mine, so I'm not taking credit for that.
ChatGPT.
ChatGPT was launched 2 years ago. And you've got a bit of insight because Quartergidia is a business, very forward-looking, very on trend, and very, you know, trying to get on top of the IT and stuff. So we've actually been running a trial, right, which you've been involved in.
Yes.
Do you want to sort of give a bit of background? Well, don't say more than you're allowed to say, but
no, of course. So 18 months ago, so 2 years ChatGPT, 18 months ago, I started talking to our chief executive because I've seen lots of tech eras, if you will. And I thought that some of the things in generative AI were things that could help our business to certainly become a little bit more productive. Yeah. And so fortunately, at the beginning of this year, I was put in charge of our AI Copilot trial. So Copilot is like the Microsoft version of ChatGPT. It's a slightly safer, I would say, version, enterprise-friendly version of ChatGPT. And we have done a trial over sort of 4 or 5 months, and we've decided that one of the best ways we can help our investment managers be more productive is to help them with writing up notes and particularly meeting notes with clients, because candidly, we've got 172 of them and they all do 100 meetings a year. And if you can save them half an hour, 45 minutes every meeting, that's a lot of time, right? And then we're all unfortunately time poor these days. Yeah. And so anything we can do to help that is important. Mm-hmm. But that's important. But then also equally important for me is it's important to have a, what I would call a marquee test or marquee case within people's working lives. Because AI is very interesting. You can sort of pick it up and play with it, and then you sort of put it down and just let it sort of gather dust. But actually, what you're trying to do if you're trying to get an organization to be AI first is get people to use it more readily and be sort of thinking about how I could be using AI in my job. And so if you think of it as a sort of normal distribution, this is quite a good use case that saves people time. Everything else we do on the sort of, you know, standard deviations out is also valuable, but debatably less valuable. Mm. Yeah.
And are you, from the data that you've seen, are we as a firm using Copilot well? Yeah. And is it additive and is it productivity enhancing?
So from the data I've seen so far, which is only a sort of month into the rollout, 65% of our users are using it reasonably regularly. Yeah, which is important.
Because that's the, you know, to talk about the bear case, I'm not that, I'm just here to be devil's advocate, but the bear case is that Microsoft roll out Copilot and ChatGPT do what they do and no one like uses it, or they play around with it and they find it fun and then they forget about it until they're down the pub and they want to ask a specific question.
So that's very interesting. So we had 325 licenses. So that's about a third of our staff. Consensus for next year for a Copilot adoption for Microsoft stock is about 5 or 6.
Okay.
Right. And so I say, so even if you take 65% of a third, you're still way ahead of that number. Now, maybe we are ahead of the curve.
Of course.
But certainly, you know, it would indicate that if people have similar experiences to us, you know, Microsoft will benefit from the adoption of Copilot. Mm.
And the chart we do have here is on GPT and Gemini. So Gemini is the Google version of a large language model. And we can see that the blue here is the adoption of ChatGPT and Gemini with the Facebook adoption kind of overlaid in yellow.
Yeah.
And we can see the ChatGPT, et cetera, is very much 2 years in tracking that. This is proportion. Daily users as a proportion of the population. So 11% of the US and Canadian population are using ChatGPT or Gemini daily, which is probably a bit higher than I would have thought. Daily is quite, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty active. I've got some bit more granular detail in a minute. The important thing, though, going back to what I said, is it's important to invest in technologies between 5% and 65% penetration, because that's where the real mass adoption goes. There are a ton of technologies that have done really well from 1% to 3% and then died, right? Okay. Because early adopters love to enthuse about something. Yeah. You know, the classics are always glasses. Stuff that goes on your face is always very difficult to get right, and people buy them and then they gather dust.
Yeah. Why doesn't the Facebook chart start from year one?
I think it actually overlays it. It's an overlay, so it's pretty much identical. Yeah, that's kind of the point. I'm not saying that this is social media. I'm just saying that it's following a sort of a normal adoption cycle.
But talking about the Google, you know, the traditional way of using Google for search, do you you know GPT or Gemini? Obviously, Gemini is Google, right?
Yes.
Does that? How much of that traditional Google do you think gets replaced by ChatGPT, Gemini?
It's very interesting. So the most important stat you need to know is that 86% of search is done by Google at the moment, right? And there may well be, Google might well be a big contender in search in the future using Gemini.
Yeah.
But it's probably not going to be 86% dominant, right? Because you've got competition.
You've got proper competition.
You've got proper competition.
Not like Ask Jeeves.
from OpenAI, Perplexity, Bing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meta, who have also been indexing the web as well. So that's very interesting. And also it's so you've got that disruption. And then you've got the fact that the DOJ is investigating Google and is going to potentially provide some remedies so that they can't be the default search engine on iOS. Importantly, they do recognize that the reason Google is the best. So in Europe, basically what they said was you have to give users the option to which search engine they want to use in iOS.
Yeah.
And everyone, so the options were Bing or DuckDuckGo or Google. And guess what everyone did? Because Google's the best.
Yeah, of course.
The reason Google is the best is because it's the biggest.
Yeah.
So how the DOJ get around that is going to be very interesting. It could mean, you know, a big benefit for other companies. Now, what's very interesting, if you look at the way that Google has deployed Gemini, is we don't just search. Search is multiple things. Search is searching for information. Search is searching for holidays.
Products or services,
And then it's searching for products and services. Right. There is commercial intent. And you will notice that a lot of Gemini searches, if you're doing sort of research, it uses Gemini, but if you're doing more commercial search, it stays with the traditional, right? And so what Google's really interested in is the commercial search. Actually, we had a little chart in there that talked about how people were using ChatGPT, and you can actually see people use it a lot more for knowledge. People use it a lot more for knowledge than they do for shopping for products.
So how do you think they monetize GPT, Gemini, Meta in the same way that
this is? So I've covered media for more than about 15 years, and the important thing is that you get eyeballs,
right?
So ChatGPT, and I know this sounds like, you know, 1999 talk, but believe it or not, that, you know, this is, if you can attract people to your site, you can work out ways of doing advertising. Whether it looks exactly the way that Google does it, you know. Keywords and sponsored links and things like that, and or even, God forbid, banner advertising. There will be a way of if you can get people to come, that's great. Or OpenAI, you know, you can, there's a paid for version of ChatGPT as well, right? Which is $20 a month, which is a.
Do you pay for it?
I don't actually. No, okay. But if I had a one use case that was really good for it, it's pennies, like relative to. What you can do for it. $20 a month is not a lot of money.
But a few people around the office pay for it.
Which
is quite, I think it's quite interesting.
Well, that is interesting. But the problem is, in internet world, if you give away something away for free, you get very good adoption. If you're charging a price for something, you get about 5% of the adoption, right? You know, YouTube TV in the UK is a good example of that. I don't know how many people pay for YouTube paid for, but it's a small number. In the US, it's slightly different because they bundle lots of more TV in there, but they are.
Cool. So ChatGPT is genuinely transformational. It's 2 years in. There's nothing come along so far that seems to me that's derailed that story.
I don't think it's not just about OpenAI. There will be 3 or 4 large language models, I think, but I don't think there need to be more than that. And interestingly, the cheapest one, or the freest one, is from Meta, called Llama. We're on Llama 3 at the moment. They're about to release Llama 4, and that's their attempt to democratize. Actually, believe it or not, Meta's done quite a lot in the open source community for developing software code and also, you know, AI as well.
The sort of ChatGPT kind of AI story is focused as much on the hardware semiconductor side of the tech sector. On the other side of the tech sector, you've got software. Yep. So Microsoft would be the best example of that. Intuit, SAP, you know, lots of Sage, for instance, in the UK. Lots of software companies. I mean, broadly, we quite like software as a sector, don't we? Albeit software has underperformed broad tech for a period of time. Is that right?
Technically, this year to date, it's caught up massively and now outperformed semis. So okay. let me make two comments as to that. When you get a tech cycle, and this happened in 99, and it normally happens as well, the first place to benefit and really show revenues is hardware, right? Yeah. And then second of all, the cloud providers, right? So those have been the first wave of the... now we're at the situation where some of the software companies are starting to show... that they have got product and it's starting to benefit revenues. Interestingly, Q4 2023, both semis and software performed identically because the market was basically saying that both these sectors are going to benefit equally, right? Then the first half of 2024, semis massively outperformed software because people were like, oh, just a minute, we haven't seen it in the numbers for software. There's a bit of macro softness. Yeah. And also, if you're a software company, you sell per seat, right? If you are, if generative AI allows you to do the same, but with 50% less seats, that's really bad as a software company. Yeah. Now, it's starting to emerge that actually macro is a bit better and that those companies can show positive revenue progression from
the investment
from generative AI. Right. So they and there are a number of case studies where companies in the software industry have gone from AI winners to AI losers to AI winners back to AI losers, and Adobe would be a very good example.
So far we've had sort of the infrastructure, the hardware benefiting massively.
Correct.
You know, the NVIDIAs, etc.
Yes.
We're moving on to the software names.
Yes.
Presumably there are applications, software businesses, we don't even know, you know, what we're going to use in a year's time that might be incredibly popular. But there's opportunities there, potentially in this more medium-sized businesses.
Look, I think I tend to characterize it as if you are a system of record, by which I mean you control, you have a lot of data, your customers' data, so that's ERP systems like SAP or Salesforce CRM or Workday or Intuit is a very good example. Sage and Intuit are very good examples. Then you're very hard to replace, right? So that's the first thing. Second thing is these companies are very, very good at adding value through pricing. They're very good and adding value through incremental services and ultimately turning that into pricing.
Right.
One of the things that's really lovely about software companies is they sort of can do AI without it being explicit. Mm. You know, we all use WhatsApp and sort of predictive text on WhatsApp. That's AI, but nobody calls it that, you know. Similarly, you get that in lots of Microsoft software and so forth. And then the final piece is, you know, they've got all that data sort of prepared and they've got the resources to employ the AI scientists so they can really tailor their products to give good customer value. So I think they do benefit net-net. The market's still struggling a little bit with this seat problem, but ultimately I think they continue to deliver, you know, good value. But there's, you know, Meta and the whole digital advertising area is another great AI beneficiary. Mm. You know, Meta's done phenomenal things to help its customers, i.e. advertisers, improve their return on advertising spend. And then you're starting to see, you know, Netflix and Amazon. Well, Amazon is already a big player in digital advertising, but they've been very successful. Netflix is coming with its ad-supported service as well.
I have managed to find a chart of the software, the actual US sector versus the IT sector.
Yes.
And we can quite clearly see this is a 10-year chart. And over time, generally, software has outperformed the broader sector.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, the last year in particular,
software
has underperformed. Mainly because hardware, NVIDIA, has been such a strong performer.
That's right. Yeah,
NVIDIA's
that's
up what,
that's
2x.
And the important thing is just that chart right at the end really spikes up. So you've seen a very big reversal in the end. But 2024 has been a very bad year for tech underperformance.
Mm.
For software underperformance. Mm. But it's continued to improve.
And then one of the things we talked about when you were here, maybe 2 years ago actually, when you were first here, we talked about Netflix, and that was one of your strongest buys. How's that worked out?
I mean, it is. It's quite interesting, isn't it? I got asked to write something a year ago, and
we'll put the chart.
We recommended four stocks at that point: Microsoft, Amazon, Meta, and Netflix. And all have done quite well, but the two that the journalist didn't use were Meta and Netflix, and these have actually been the best performers. Yeah. Meta, I've already talked about. They're using, they're really, you know, Zuckerberg's done a brilliant job at pivoting the business and being very much AI first. And he's got a core business that's really humming because of AI, but a whole load of AI optionality. Netflix is one of the simplest businesses in the world, in my opinion. So what you have to do is grow your revenue base faster than your cost base. How do you grow your revenue base? You try and attract new users. You can do that two ways. One, by clamping down on password sharing. Remember, they've got 280 million subscribers, but a couple of years ago, they announced they'd found 100 million that were basically password sharing. I think we all have evidence of that. And then the other way is to drive more subscribers or even more revenue by doing an ad-supported tier. So by charging the consumer less for the product, but offering advertising as well. So you drive your revenues at a 10 to 15% growth rate, but as long as you grow content spend, which is 70% of your costs, you grow that slower, you have huge operational leverage. It's not too many years ago that Netflix was unprofitable, and now it's producing mid-20s margins.
We had a bet in about 2018, didn't we?
We did.
About Netflix, and I took the wrong side of the bet. and my thesis at the time was that they were spending a lot of money on making stuff, The Crown, House of Cards, etc., etc., and the cash wasn't coming in, and the growth didn't feel to me was fast enough to be able to pay those costs. And they did quite a lot of convertible bonds at the time, which is always like a bit of a kind of red flag, isn't it? But I wouldn't say it paid off for them, but they managed to accelerate their users. I mean, the chart's incredible. 5-year chart goes back just pre-pandemic. And if we, you know, the COVID is at the blip at the bottom, down to $350, $300, got to 700. And then of course 2022 came along and the stock kind of halved, if not a little bit more almost, as people moved away from those this is the classic stay-at-home name, wasn't it?
Yeah, the narrative at the time was, if you haven't got Netflix now,
you're never going to
have it, right? Yeah. And we think it was a bit more, and they lost, their subscriber growth was more difficult. The issue, though, is one, they managed to find ad-supported and password sharing. The other thing that's interesting going into macro as well is, I used to cover Sky back in the day, 100%. And television is an incredibly cheap form of entertainment. So it's very defensive. So, you know, do you go out for an extra meal or two, or do you stay in and watch TV at whatever the number is, $10 a month, £10 a month?
No, totally.
So that has helped. But, you know, when the stock was $200, it's always difficult, right?
Scratching around, getting what's going on here.
That's right. Yeah. So it's worked out okay, and it's really cemented its place as the global leader in television. I've said this many times, but I can remember when there was Anglia Television and Granada Television, and television was regional. Yeah. And you used to try to do a television channel on 5 million subscribers or 5 million viewers. And then it moved to ITV, which was on 50 million. And now Netflix is doing it on 300 million.
Yeah. Right? They've got an NFL game coming up, haven't they?
They have Christmas. Boxing. Yes, yes. I don't know which ones they've got, but that is one of their proper first forays into sport. They are not, they have a lovely expression on this. They are not anti-sport, but they are pro-profit. Because the problem when you become aligned with a sports league is they price you up and price you up. Again, one of the big events for Sky was the Premier League auction.
Yeah.
And they would always find somebody else to bid against Sky. And so that was always difficult. So you became beholden to the rights owners.
And then last thing before we sort of wrap up, because time has flown by amazingly, is, you know, the Mag 7, big tech, whatever you want to call them. I mean, are they cheap or are they expensive? I mean, that's the values in the
BI. This is a little bit of an old chart, I've got to say.
Okay.
I've got a chart right at the top of my presentation that talks a little bit about this. I tell you what, that's a very good chart.
This
because what's this really is trying to say is that growth has been superior for tech over the last year. Into 2025, that growth is less superior. So that's important. And then there's the other chart that sort of adjacent to it talks about Mag 7 versus other tech. Yeah. And again, shows a similar trend, which is basically that the delta, the difference between big tech
six,
and,
as they call it.
And regular and normal and you know other stocks are available is less, right? And so that means there's going to be a bit more of a, I hesitate to call it mid-cap bias, because a mid-cap in the US is sort of 400 billion.
We'd love to have one of them in the FTSE.
Right, yeah, so. Well, quite, yes. Yeah, there's lots of FTSE stats. But ultimately, our business is about finding global world-class businesses wherever they reside. Yeah. You know, one of my meetings was with the CFO of TSMC. Interestingly, they said, oh, it was great to see you on CNBC the other day.
No way, did
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they really did. Yeah, so that was quite fun. Anyway, cool. So yes, is tech cheap? No, on an absolute basis. Is it cheap relative to the growth that it's providing? Yes, in some cases. And it's super important to be, you know, you'll know I don't like these groupings of Mag 7 and blah, 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 because they're all quite different businesses to me. Yeah. And so it's about finding, you know, we've done really well this year being overweight Meta, underweight Google, overweight Netflix, underweight Disney, you know, and trying to, you know, good position in Nvidia, not such a big position in Apple. Microsoft has not worked. Microsoft has not worked. So it's not all been, you know, plain sailing. But is it cheap? No. Do we think it's justifiable? Yes.
Some of these EPS, so the EPS growth estimates, are they lower than they would be because of the spend towards Nvidia? And the huge investment.
That's a very, very good question. One of the reasons Microsoft has underperformed actually is it shows up better in free cash flow, in earnings, because free cash flow, you know, it's immediate expense. So free cash flow per share for Microsoft has come down through the year and caused that underperformance. Now, what's important is that they show return on spend, return on that capex over the next couple of years,
and we are, you know, we all fingers crossed and hoping the returns are there, but we're not. We haven't seen it yet.
James, hope is never a good investment strategy. I've done a lot of channel checks around, and this is one of the reasons I like cloud as a theme, because I can check with CIOs whether they're spending on cloud. I can check with the cloud providers. I can check with the supply chain and the components that are going into those things. I can check in Asia for the companies that make the bits that go into the chips and so forth. So I get a very good, let's call it holistic view of how things are working. And it all starts with IT spending, but there are multiple cross currents of, and it's interesting actually, everyone thinks that semiconductors has done really well. AI semiconductors have done really well this year. Auto, industrial, PC, smartphone have done terribly, actually, because they're more cyclical and they don't have that bid. There's lots of other, you know, lots of individual reasons. So, you know, you've got to be very careful and very specific about where you invest.
I mean, our friend at Baird, Ross Yarrow, he's got this chart. I'm not sure if we're allowed to put it in, but we can talk through it. But this shows the aggregate capital expenditure for Amazon, Meta, Google and Microsoft. He's rather helpfully color-coded it. And combined, those four companies in 2025 are estimated to spend $250 billion on CapEx. And a lot of that, we don't know exactly, but a lot of that is going to Nvidia, right, for semiconductors.
Yeah.
To build the sheds, to house the data centers.
Yeah, so Nvidia's data center revenues are about $100 billion.
Yeah. So half that.
That's right. Now, bear in mind that the Nvidia's revenues, only about 50% of Nvidia's revenues come from those companies. The rest comes from enterprises or tier two cloud providers.
And we've got charts on this.
And increasingly from sovereigns. So building supercomputers and so forth. So that's one of the things that I watch very closely for NVIDIA, is that the customer base is very diverse. Yeah, that's the job.
So Saudi spending 3.6% of GDP on AI spend.
3.6% of GDP?
Yeah. Correct. Let's see how much.
Not a number either.
What's that?
40 billion.
That's monstrous.
40 billion.
It's monstrous.
Right.
Yeah. So they are.
Unfortunately, the UK doesn't feature on this list.
It does not. No.
That's not. The purpose of today is not to, to rubbish the UK.
France and Germany
We can spend enough time doing that normally.
Look, let's see whether, you know, Saudi Arabia have got a lot of grand plans. Let's see what actually transpires, right? So, if you are trying to pivot your economy, that is a good way to do it. Yeah. It was actually my first question I asked to Colette, the CFO of NVIDIA, is, you know, why are these countries doing this investment? You know, is it to build a digital god, right? Because, you know, if you're looking at improving the IQ of this AI, you know, you have to spend a lot of money, there's lots of reasons why they're building these, but it is going to be seen as a competitive advantage, I think, in the future. And obviously, you've talked ad nauseam about the US, China, AI, Cold War, should we call it?
Absolutely. That's going to be defining for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and clients often ask about the regulatory risks with kind of the Mag 7 and what happens, and, you know, their monopolies, why aren't they split up? And my answer to them often is because there is a computer war against China. Mm. They split up these businesses,
it weakens their position.
Yeah, and at the moment, it doesn't suit to split them up.
No. Well, what's happening at the moment is all of the, you don't see many of these headlines, you see a few, but all the big leaders of the tech companies are going in for powwows with Trump and Musk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mark Andreessen as well, who I really rate, actually. Yes, to put their case forward to why they should be seen as national champions. Let's put it left alone. Let's leave it like that. I mean, you know, Europe is leading in terms of AI regulation, the EU AI Act, but nobody's actually dared test it yet. So it's a big document that's so far not been tested.
Yeah. Cool. I've realised I've got a meeting 4 minutes ago, so it's all been a bit rushed today, so sorry about that. It's the fault of the district line. Anything else, Ben, that you wanted to touch on before we wrap it up?
Golly, no, I think that's covered it. I mean, you know, it's nice to be able to actually go into a Waymo and sort of see that these things are real, because a lot of AI can be seen as sort of jam tomorrow or very ethereal. But and then also the fact that we're using it more in our own business.
Got another video if we can get that up, Alex.
Yeah, I'm very interested in this. That's it going through a four-way stop, which... Actually, I had it at one point cross quite a busy three lanes of traffic.
Did you?
Go straight across it. And I was a little bit like, but it was absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely fine. Yeah. So there we are. So it's nice to be able to give these videos to people to show that this stuff is,
I mean, it's weird.
Proper.
It almost feels like a foreign planet in a way.
Like a video game.
I mean, it's, you know, it feels a long way.
It's interesting, right? So I was very pro it and was like, wow.
Yeah.
And I sent it to some of my friends who are the same age. And the difference in opinion was just, you know, And to one of them, I was just like, well, you still have a red flag, a guy with a red flag in front of your car. So, you know, this is always, there's at every technological revolution. Ultimately, it's not about the tech.
Yeah.
It's about whether consumers see a benefit from it, right?
I mean,
that's what drives tech adoption. The smartphone isn't brilliant in itself. It's brilliant because it gives
everybody
you huge amounts of utility.
Well.
Oh, there's an interesting stat. How much, if you did every year, you instead of buying an iPhone since 2007, September 2007, you'd invested $1,000 in Apple.
How much would that be?
Once a year, $1,000. So that's 25, 30 years at...
No, 18 years.
18 years at $1,000 each. So $18,000. And we probably...
$45 million.
I was going to say
it's not that
$1 billion.
It's not that $1 billion. It's $250,000.
Yikes.
Yeah. To which I told the Apple CFO this the other day, and to which my riposte was, but if you'd not had a smartphone for 18 years, how much value would you have lost?
100%. Yeah.
Economic value would you have lost?
Job opportunities and team. 100%. Yeah, so yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good. Well, thank you, Ben, for your time today.
Pleasure.
Thank you as always. Hope everyone has a lovely Christmas and good New Year, etc. And we hope to see you again in the new year. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.